This is Strategy Taken, a podcast about hard decisions and how strategic leaders in financial services make them, with your host, Luis Sorzella.
Hello. Welcome to the Strategy Taken. Today, I'm very excited because my guest is my friend, Marcelo Nantes. Marcelo is the portfolio manager and founder of Tower 3, a Brazilian asset management firm that has a killer team. Before Tower 3, Marcelo was the chief investment officer with Bradesco, the third largest bank in Latin America, and portfolio manager for Brazil with the Ashmore Group out of the US. And he has a great story about a decision he had to make in response to the structural changes the Brazilian asset management market is still undergoing. Marcelo, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Luis, for having me here in your podcast. It was a pleasure sharing my experience with you and your audience. I hope I can help some insights, and if they can learn anything, I think I'll be happy.
Marcelo, can you give us a very quick summary of how the asset management sector works in Brazil?
In Brazil, in terms of asset management, we have the large banks with their own asset management. We have independent managers, usually small shops. They have few products, but they are more specialized. Usually, the shops are dedicated to equities or hedge funds or credit funds, and they use the distribution either of the large banks, or they have special firms that with financial advisors that distribute these small funds products. In the large banks, they are multi-strategy, multi-product asset managers. They have their own distribution business, and they also distribute third-party funds as well. The industry has evolved a lot over the last few years as technology developed, the home broker infrastructure developed in the sense that people are more familiar trading or making investment decisions at home, learning by themselves through the internet, all these digital influencers. So the dynamic of the industry has been changing over the last few years in the sense that the growth of the independent asset managers has been quite strong because of the access to the distribution, and the distribution side as well has been less weighted or less dependent on the large banks, and the independent distributors of the asset managers, the products have been growing. And I think one last thing that changed in the industry, I mean, everybody is familiarized with the interest rates in North America. You know, you guys are having a long run of bull market with interest rates, you know, below 50 basis points. In Brazil, over the last decade, you know, interest rates are always very high, I mean, above 10%. And the COVID crisis interest rates in Brazil went down really fast, which also fueled the growth of more complex products, or, you know, people are seeking for yield. They, you know, start investing in more equities products and credit products, which also help the independent asset managers to grow. And now, as we speak, the Brazilian Central Bank has hiked rates recently ahead of the Fed in the U.S. So interest rates are high again, and the industry is going through its transformation.
One thing that you mentioned right before this call, the popularization of asset managers is a very, very recent phenomenon. Most retail investors in the past didn't venture beyond their primary financial institution for funds, which has a lot to do with internet, but also a lot to do with high interest rates in the past. Like, you didn't have to be very creative to get a good yield.
Yeah. So in Brazil, investor over the last two decades, going back, what happened is you have a perfect combination of investment option, which is government bonds with high liquidity, high returns, and low risk. Low risk, of course, for Brazilians, the zero risk investment is government bonds. So as the Brazilian government always paid very good yields, real rates like 4 or 5% per year above inflation. So Brazilian investors, as you said, didn't have to be much creative. And, you know, I think the smart decision has always been lend your money to the government. You have good rates, so you don't have to worry. There's no risk, and the yields are really good. And the combination of these interest rates going down, which make people, you know, I need to, well, where's my returns? You know, my money sit on the bank. It has been giving me good yields and not giving me more yields anymore. And the development of, and I'm talking about the tools in the internet as digital influencers, brokers, has provided the individual investors options to learn what are the products and to access this product directly. So this fueled the growth of the independent managers. As you said, you know, I had my bank account in this financial institution. They offered me these products and I'm happy with that. And at some point in time, the combination, I need different types of products. And now I have the offer of these products in my home broker platform. And I have the information that I can learn with. So this combination was actually what changed the industry a lot. So quite different than it was 10 years ago.
That's the creation of Tower 3.
Tower 3 is part of this process. I've been working in the financial market for many years in the US and in Brazil as a CIO of a large financial institution, dealing with all type of investment, making decisions. I look at my background, all the experience that I have, and say, you know where my passion is. You start becoming more a executive or you want to be more close to the market. And we see where the passion is, where the opportunity is. There is a point that the market offered me an opportunity to start a new product. That's where Tower 3 started, from this combination of different factors. And one of curiosity here, Tower 3, the name of the fund, is the name of a ski slope in Jackson Hole. These towers that go uphill, you know, where the trams are based, there is a very hard slope that comes from the bottom of the tower number 3 of the tram. And it's a very hard, very challenging. I'm sure that lots of people in North America has skied in Jackson Hole. They know that slope. So we actually named our firm after this slope.
Because it's a very high and difficult.
You know, actually, there is some personal story behind my partner Ricardo has been going there for a long time. I went there. Actually, I like more Jackson Hole in the summertime than wintertime. We started very small, but we are here for the long term to add value to our investors. We have a large infrastructure team, and we have experience in all the markets. We went through several different crises since the 90s. You know, we Latin Americans, we are proud of the crisis that we went through. We believe that the investment industry is hard to be a good investor. You have to go through a few crises. Risk management is not something that you learn without going through the risk events. Several crises in the late 90s, and then we have the Mexico crisis, the Thailand crisis, the Korean crisis in the 90s. Then you have the internet bubble burst in the early 2000s. We have the 2008 Lehman Brothers or the mortgage-backed securities, you know, breakdown as well. The Brexit, the cycle, the rally in the U.S. over the last years. I mean, Brazil have a few extra crises. So a combination of seasoned team know how to manage risk. The business of investment is core to how you manage risk. And a combination of a good track record where we went through in terms not only manage risk, but also deliver performance. And on top of that, we have not only a view of the investment process per se, but how to manage a business. Because for you to be successful in this industry, it's not enough that you have a good performance. You need to be able to attract a good team. You need to choose good people. You need to pay them well. You need to make sure that you have your team motivated, aligned, so you can deliver consistent returns over time.
So I understand that the story has to do a lot with this process that you described. Brazil went through of popularizing investment access, especially to retail investors.
Yes. What happened is, as I said, with the technological advance, with access, and with these different cycles in interest rates in Brazil, product offering of investment grew a lot. So you have mainly in these big banks, their customer base that they serve with these investment products for many years. The customers are relatively happy because basic products are very good. If you offer a good product that pure government bonds, everybody's happy. And it's good for the client, it's good for the bank. So when we started to realize we need to move ahead of the market and develop new products, of course, the bank had all the portfolio of products with equity products, hedge funds, different types of allocation product, quantitative funds, index fund, they had the whole portfolio of products to offer. But we realized that at some point in time, the interest rates would come down and the clients would require more sophisticated products with higher returns. And we need to develop that or further develop that technology or and to increase capacity of the fund. I think one thing that I think makes sense to explain, if you're not in the industry of invest management, if you have one guy, one portfolio manager running a fund, there's so much money he can run. It's not infinite. So capacity is a problem. If you want to offer more products to your customers, you need to have more people managing the money. And that's one concept that is not very intuitive, just to make it more simple. If I want to buy a stock, $1 million, that's okay. But if you want to buy $1 billion or $5 billion, you're going to move in the market. So one person, there's so much money that one person can manage. The more money they has, the lower capacity of that person has to generate higher returns to the clients because his decision affects the market. The outperformance or the extra return will be lower. So we identify, you know, we need to grow. And for us to grow or to offer more complex products, we need to expand our basically hire more people, develop more technology, and sometimes hire more people that already run more complex products outside the bank. But we know that especially for very high margin products or high return products, the temptation to not increase costs is very high. People want to keep their margin high. They're not willing to give up margins to grow. That's the bait. You need to be very well-structured, well-communicated, well-planned. I mean, high-margin products over a long period of time, they will deteriorate. Barriers to enter start to go down, more competition comes. Classic strategy textbook. As we started seeing that, I think our challenge was, you know, to convince the senior management that there were two scenarios. We had one okay scenario, which was we're going to reduce our margins, but we're going to grow faster in order to keep the profitability of the business. Or if you don't do anything, you're going to lose your business because you're going to be outperformed by your competitors. They're going to start growing, offering more capacity with better quality. 5 or 10 years' time, you run the risk of losing your business, which is a very good business. Part of our project was to structure the products that we want to offer. What are the capacity or the size of these products that we want to offer, meaning the demand that we will have? And of course, you need to hire more people and pay the people that you currently had better. Otherwise, you're going to lose them to our competitors. And in the middle of this process, the COVID crisis came, which accelerated the interest rate drop in Brazil, which was huge. For the crisis, we were about 8, 10% interest rates in Brazil. It went down to 2. And as I said, I mean, the process that we were anticipating would be a slow and gradual process happened so fast that we needed to implement that faster. It helped us to convince the senior management that was necessary to go through the whole process to grow your team, invest in technology, change the compensation structure. And we did that successfully. Well, it was not as gradual that we planned, but I think in the end of the day, we were able to start that process and get the bank prepared to face the new market environment.
Let me see if I get this straight. First, you were already getting too big for you to maintain the type of returns and type of growth that that you historically had. Second, exactly. The market was becoming more competitive. So instead of you traditionally had your captive investors, and now you are working on a different dynamics. You needed to make a trade-off, a business that had historically high margins and a very stable customer base, for a business that allowed for growth, but at a much higher cost.
Exactly. Basically, you're giving up a little bit of your margins to sustain your profitability, probably a little bit lower, but even very good profitability, because the option was even worse.
Well, asset managers are compensated for performance, so I suppose that it's not an easy discussion to have.
Yes. There is two reasons that make one person invest in a fund. Performance is the second, believe it or not. First is trust. You're not going to give your money to someone that have a very good performance track record, but if you don't trust. So trust is very important. You know, we call in Brazil fiducia, which is, you know that the guy is going to do with your money what he is supposed to do. He's not going to disappear with your money. He's not going to run more risk than they were supposed to do. And performance is the second one. Basically, you're right. But I think on the sense of the in that institution specifically, that was not an issue. But we need to, you know, focus a little bit more on the performance.
I suppose that is true everywhere. Maybe not in crypto, but everywhere else. I think that probably.
Yeah. Well, but that's a good point. I think the crypto, it's a perception. Some people have the perception it's safe. Very few people really understand what's behind it. But I don't want to get into this too much.
All right. So how did you approach this decision?
Well, we don't have an option. The option of do nothing is also a strategic decision. And we realized that do nothing was not a good decision, because if we don't do that move, the industry was moving so fast in this sense of distribution. Clients didn't need the large financial institution anymore. The asset managers, the products were available. The distribution was growing fast. When we started doing the math, the financials for the cost of doing nothing was very expensive in terms of, you know, long-term profitability or sustainability of the business. It's a not easy decision, cutting a little bit of my profits here because I want to have a more sustainable business over time. It's still a very good business because, you know, capital employed in asset management is low, but returns of the business per se is very high. So you're going to cut your returns a little bit, but the sustainability of your product is going to be much longer than if you do nothing. It was the main discussion. Short-term profits and high risk in the long-term, or lower short-term profits, but a better visibility of long-term.
If I may play devil's advocate for a second, right? I think that what you're describing is very rational and very logical, and it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I can close my eyes and see someone saying, I've been in this market for 50 years. I've seen all these fads come and go. I assume there was a little bit of denial in the whole process, even if the math looked sound.
Definitely. That was a big chunk of the discussion. You know, cycles come and go, and we are here for the last 70 years. We went through all these different business cycles, all these different chains. And I think the approach was, this is not a cycle per se. This is a change in the structure of the industry. Cyclicalities, we know how to manage. We've been operating in this environment for so many years. We're not afraid of cycles. The problem is that the structure of the industry changed. The barrier to enter in this industry changed. You change the game more to the sense of the risk of doing nothing is huge, because this is a really good business. You play with the risk appetite of the institution. The cost of doing nothing is too high. You cannot afford doing this, because it's a very good business. So you're definitely right, the discussion comes. So as you said, I mean, I'm a very rational guy. You need to show exactly this is not a cycle. This is a structural change. We already have players that didn't exist 20 years ago, growing very fast. We see the trends in demand, and it's, you know, it's a convincing process. But to be, you know, totally fair, what we plan to do, we phase the projects. We didn't do everything at once. Fortunately for this project, at least, the COVID crisis was so intense, and it showed that the demand or the trends in the market confirm what we said so strongly that after phase one, we didn't have any problem moving forward in phase two.
How did phase one look like?
Well, I'll tell you, the most difficult thing, you need to hire a lot of people at once. And this is hard. This is really hard. You are hiring people to manage third-party money. So you need to hire people that fits in the culture, which is not easy. You need to understand, people understand the way we do business, that's the way we do business. You need to fit in this culture. This is one. Second, we need people that perform well in terms of investment deliverables. We need to do that. And third, and that was the thing that we, our compensation structure, of course, people need to be happy with our compensation structure. And I tell you, the most difficult thing was the culture thing. We were running a very tight ship. Now, I had like 80 people working for me. And we used to say, there's no way, no place to hide. Every single portfolio manager were evaluated on a daily basis on their individual performance, on risk profile, and everything. We measured everything every day in absolute terms, in relative terms, compared to their peers. So this, culturally speaking, is very hard to get because some people in the investment industry in Brazil, at least, they try to run a very easygoing style. Oh, I'm a long-term investor. I'm going to make money. I'm okay with that. But you are accountable on a daily basis. As long as you're inside your risk parameter or limits, I'm okay. And that, I think, you're asking, this was the largest challenge we have, is to hire people that understand the way you work. People are not very used to accountability on the sense that the way we did. And to a certain extent, that's a good thing because people that don't deliver, they don't last.
I can see that. Culture is, culture for what it's worth is a very resilient thing. I like that thing that Mike Tyson says, that everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah.
What was the everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face moment in this project?
I'll tell you, we planned that ahead of the COVID crisis. We started implemented and the need came. As I said, interest rates went down. Investors started, everybody doing the home office, doing their investment at home, huge volatility. The market started rallying. May 2020, everything was ready to start implementing and rolling until reality, knocks on the door and say, financial institutions in crisis moments, they have one priority and one priority only, balance sheet preservation. If you work in a bank, survival depends on your conserve your balance sheet. And back in 2020, March, April, May, June, until we were able to understand or had a little visibility how the world would look like 12 or 24 months later, balance sheet conservation or preservation was the main model in a big financial institution in Brazil. Nobody wants to take risk, nobody wants to invest, and that was the point where the large financial institutions in Brazil disconnect with the independent asset manager. Because the large institutions say, I want my client's money not in funds. I want the client's money in the balance sheet of the bank. Products that I want to sell to my clients is different now. Instead of selling funds to our clients, I want to sell papers of the bank. So basically, it increased the offer. So that was when we said, there is a disconnection here. And it makes total sense from the perspective of a large financial institution. That's what they have to do. And all of them did that. And that was the right thing to do. But from my perspective, running an asset management in that point in time was a little bit, you know, frustration having the ship ready to take off and everybody's pulling the brakes on the at least on the demand for the clients of the bank. And that was a moment that we said, you know what, there's something, you know, it's this connection, I understand, but it's a little bit frustrating.
Marcelo, thank you very much. It was a very interesting story.
Thank you again. It was fun for me. You know, it's always, it's different when we stop for a moment and start talking about these moments that we had in life where difficult decisions you have to make. As we said, well, what was the good part? We stop and think about, you know, what could have, you know, been wrong. And think it's very interesting for me as well, you know, to be able to share this with you. That's very nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you are open to knowing more, you can subscribe to our podcast and find us on thestrategytaken.com.